Another important question was this. Yes, we lived in a community, open and assimilated with each other, but at the moment that bomb shelter was in sight and the air raid siren was blasting in the environment, if you see your neighbor coming over trying to get in your bomb shelter, many cases were revealed through experiences where this happened, people would shoot their neighbor who was trying to get into their bomb shelter. Why? Protection, everybody out for themselves. Protect yourself. Close yourself off from the outside. So you get into that bomb shelter, you closed yourself off from the outside. Well, if it was just an air raid alert, 10 minutes later, okay, you breathe, you get out of the bomb shelter, you go back to the job, the factory starts, the school starts, the business, everything's back in order. It was sort of like a 10 or 15 minute coffee break. No problem, just an acute response. I thought it was emergency, everything's cleared up, I'm ready to go again. But here's where the problem comes from. Everybody's on the job, schools are in, all that stuff's going on. The air raid siren goes off, everybody runs to their bomb shelters, they're hiding in their bomb shelter. But here's the problem. There is no all clear signal. The question then becomes very profound and says, how long can you survive? And the answer is, for as long as you can on the nutrients and things you kept in your bomb shelter. Because when you run out of those nutrients, you're going to die if you're in that bomb shelter. And if you have all the nutrients in there and you're not making any new nutrients, why aren't you making any new ones? Because everybody's in the bomb shelter. The factory's closed. We're not making anything anymore. And all of a sudden you start to realize protection can only be used for relatively short periods of time. Because while you're in protection, you've shut down the growth mechanisms. Yeah, but the growth mechanisms fed you with the energy and all the things you needed to stay alive. So while you're in a bomb shelter, growth mechanisms are shut off. And so it turns out, very interestingly, in the world that we live in, that the fears are no longer acute fears that just show up like a saber tooth, which is obviously real scary and I wouldn't want to be running from one of them. But the reality is, if you escape from that saber tooth tiger, you could go back in your life again. But today we have fears that we seemingly can't escape from. Who's Al-Qaeda? Where are they? I have no idea, but they're around. Where's bird flu? It's out there somewhere. Is it around? It's going to get me. And all of a sudden you start to see we are presented with fears that threaten our survival, perceptions that cause us to consider whether we can stay alive. When we see those perceptions, it causes us to get into a protection posture. Well, what did this mean physiologically? I mean, I talked about the bomb shelter. I physically go into the bomb shelter. I'm disconnected from the world, and I can only stay in there as long as I got nutrients for. Yeah, but what does this mean in my body? If I perceive that the world is threatening, what happens? Well, this is an important story because it affects almost everybody on the planet today. And it deals with how the biology deals with the stress of survival issues. The primary mechanism in dealing with stress in the human body is the adrenal system, which in grade school and high school we commonly refer to it as the fight or flight mechanism. The adrenal system, upon appropriate stimuli of perceptions that require us to get into protection, release stress hormones to the body that change the physiology and functioning of the body. Well, how does all this get connected? So let's start with the basic protection mechanisms. Let's talk about the fact that we actually have two protection mechanisms and one central growth mechanism. The growth mechanism, all the visceral organs involved with respiration, digestion, excretion, keeping the blood filtered and clean and all that kind of stuff like that. Those are part of our growth mechanisms. We breathe, we take in food, we get metabolites, we get energy, we keep the system clean. That's what we use for growth. Protection mechanisms are actually two different ones. One of them deals with internal threats. One deals with external threats. The mechanisms dealing with internal threats, meaning things that get into our body like viruses, bacteria, parasites, that would have a tendency to eat us from the inside out, or the presence of cancer cells, which will destroy the community that we live in. These threats are dealt with under the skin by a system called the immune system. The immune system deals with anything that gets under the skin that threatens our survival. The adrenal system is another protection mechanism, but it really protects us against things on the outside of our skin. So a poisonous snake, a saber-toothed tiger, an Al-Qaeda renegade, all represent things that are outside of our body that when perceived will engage the adrenal system and not the immune system. So for example, if you had a stomach infection and you were trying to work with it, with your immune system, and you were being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, your biology would have to decide how much energy should I put into dealing with the bacterial infection and how much energy should I put toward running away from the tiger. As you could clearly see, that's not a hard question to answer. The obvious answer is you throw everything you can into running away from the tiger, deal with the bacteria later. Well, what controls all this? What controls what happens in response to a stress response? And the answer is a system that is abbreviated as the HPA axis. The HPA axis stands for the following three organ systems. H is hypothalamus, P is pituitary, and A is adrenal system. How do they interact and work? And it goes like this. The hypothalamus is the portion of the central nervous system that interprets the perceptions. It is involved with reading a perception in the environment and identifying whether it's a perception that encourages growth or requires protection. If the hypothalamus sees something in the environment that is threatening, its job is to communicate to the 50 trillion cells that make up the community called the human body to tell them, listen, there's something out there that's threatening us. We must collectively as a community engage in a response to protect ourselves. So the hypothalamus wants to coordinate the activity of 50 trillion cells to deal with the threat in the environment. So how's that going to happen? The answer is the H goes to the P, HPA, the pituitary gland, the master gland. So what's the function of the master gland? It is the gland that coordinates the activities of 50 trillion cells. So the hypothalamus says we're being besieged by a threatening situation and sends a signal to the pituitary gland and says, oh my goodness, in this particular threat, it's something from the outside. And so what we're going to have to do is engage fight or flight. That's the adrenal system. That's the A, HPA. So the pituitary gland sends a signal to the adrenal gland to release adrenal stress hormones. So the action so far is this. I'm going through my world. I see something threatening. I interpret it in my brain, in my hypothalamus. The hypothalamus says that this is indeed a threat to our survival, sends a signal to the pituitary gland, the master gland, and says, let's coordinate the 50 trillion cells to deal with this threat, which is coming from the outside. The pituitary gland says, okay, in that case, let's bring in the adrenal gland as the primary source of control. The adrenal gland releases stress hormones throughout the body to coordinate 50 trillion cells. Well, let's consider what happens in the first step. The first step is this. If I'm being chased by that saber-toothed tiger and I have to use fight or flight, that means I'm going to depend on my protection by using my arms and legs, either to get into a fight or run away from that threat. Well, to do that, then I'm going to have to fund, remember, protection requires energy as well as growth requires energy. If I'm going to fund this protection response, then that means I'm going to have to send extra nutrients right away to my arms and legs because these are the guys that are going to have to carry me. I don't know how far I'm going to go, but I need all of the energy to go to the arms and legs. And the reason is, as I said before, look, I might be putting some of that energy into fighting a bacterial infection, but if I get eaten by the lion, then the bacterial infection is the lion's problem, not mine anymore. But the system is intelligent enough. If you're being chased by a lion, bacterial infection can wait. We'll deal with that later. The system will send the blood to the arms and legs. But listen to this phrase. This is a very interesting phrase out of a textbook. It goes like this. In the presence of the stress hormones, the blood is preferentially sent to the arms and legs. Well, that invokes some kind of thought. Preferentially sending blood to the arms and legs. How do you do something like that? The answer is simple. The stress hormones cause the blood vessels in the gut to constrict. That means as blood is flowing through the system, it no longer goes through the viscera, but is shunted to the outside. So the blood is now preferentially going to the arms and legs. Yeah, because those are the structures I'm going to need to have all that energy available for so I can run away from this thing. Well, it's a very interesting point because I say, well, wait, the arms and legs are used in protection. What was the role of the viscera? The viscera is growth and maintenance. That's where the lungs and digestive tract and taking care of the blood and taking care of the nutrition, that all occurs in the viscera. Yeah, but if you squeeze the blood vessels so the blood doesn't go into the viscera, that means you are not providing energy, which is carried by the blood, into the viscera, so the viscera shuts down. This is the point I made before. In a state of protection, you shut off growth because you're allocating all your energy reserves, your blood, to be used by the arms and legs in this particular process of escape. So the very important point that we brought out before about a protection response, it compromises growth. The more stress you're under, the more you shut off your growth mechanisms in an effort to protect yourself by giving nourishment to the adrenal system so that you can do that fight and flight as necessary. Well, it's also interesting because I said the immune system is also affected by this, and this is indeed a fact. And we also find that the stress hormones, when released into the body, not only cause the blood vessels of the gut to constrict, they also cause the immune system to shut off. And the reason for that is very obvious. And the fact is this. If I have energy allocations and, you know, and you're in charge of distributing the energy and you're being chased by a lion, you have to think of how much energy should you put into that bacterial infection, as we discussed before. No, you put all of it into running. So it's very interesting because the medical profession has known for years about the fact that stress hormones shut off the immune system. In fact, it's frequently used when people are recipients of grafts of tissues or organs. These recipients of these foreign tissues are given stress hormones as a mechanism of shutting off their immune system so that they don't reject the grafted foreign tissue. So it's used as a, you know, as a medical process then to help sustain the grafted tissue in a foreign graft in a human by shutting down that individual's immune system and not allowing for the rejection of the graft. But what does this mean in the operation of day-to-day life for all of us? And that says, every day as we are getting stressed, the more stress we're under, the more we begin to shut off the immune system, because the adrenal hormones are very much the element of switching. Those are signals that switch the switches on the immune system to shut them down. So it says this, every day as we experience stress, we're debilitating our immune system. We're shutting its functions down to conserve energy to deal with what appears to be the primary concern, the stress that's outside, the thing that threatens us from outside. Well, this is a very interesting condition for this reason. Every one of us, myself here, you there, right now are infected with almost all the viruses and bacterial pathogens that affect humans. If I took a blood sample from every one of you out there, we'll find that there are bacteria and viruses in it. And yet you might report back to me and say, well, listen, I'm not sick. I'm doing very, very well right now. And what about those infective agents? Well, it's an interesting classification provided to these microbes that are in us by medicine. They're called opportunistic organisms, meaning this. Under normal situations, we're infected by these organisms, and under normal situations, the immune system will continuously make an effort to negate the effect of these organisms so they don't get a foothold and take advantage of us. And that we expend a lot of energy in doing that because the world that we live in, every breath that we take is filled with bacteria and yeast and viruses, and our skin is covered with things just walking down the street. We're continuously being bombarded by these threatening things that try to get in to our body and take over the system. Our immune system is, of course, very intelligent and can handle all this and does so with a great deal of ability of negating these. But it doesn't kill all of them. It can't kill all of them because every time you take a new breath, there's something new coming in. So the issues are it does its best and it maintains them and keeps them from taking over. But as you get stressed, the stress hormone levels start to elevate. The stress hormones from the adrenal glands will actually start to inhibit and curtail the activity of the immune system so that all of a sudden these organisms start to get a little bit more breathing room, more free space. They're not being attacked by the immune system as much. That's when these organisms use the name that they've been given, opportunistic organisms. If you cut back the effectiveness of your immune system, these organisms take that opportunity and will then start to manifest problems. And so that as you repress the immune system, common everyday things can start to take over and kill us. In fact, this is really the consequence of why AIDS patients die. They don't die from the AIDS virus. They die from the fact that their immune system is compromised and these opportunistic organisms, such as the one that provides for pneumonia, go unchecked in this system and as a result take advantage of it, take the opportunity, and can kill the individual as a result of this infection. But for those of us that are out there in the real world, every day that we respond to stresses that are picked up by our hypothalamus, are we going to keep this job? Is our paycheck really for real going to be assured to us? Are we going to be invaded by somebody? Is the bird flu going to get me? Whatever these fears are that you are having every day, this is causing the hypothalamus to engage the pituitary gland, to then engage the adrenal gland and prepare us for the protection response at the cost of two things we just recognized. One, shutting down or inhibiting the growth mechanisms of the viscera because we divert the blood. And two, shutting down the immune system as we take the energy that we were using for that and get it in a ready state for fight or flight over the fears that we're living in. So those are two very important debilitating events that can threaten us, and most people are very familiar with these, because as we start to find stress in our lives, we start to get weaker, we start to find that sicknesses becomes a way of life the more stress we're under. Kids at school, for example, will start to really get sick more around exam time because that's the point where the stresses start coming in, and then the fears of passing the exam, which is an external threat, of course, lead to a suppression of the immune system, and then the opportunistic organisms take over. The concept that we have to catch something is very silly in this regard, because it turns out most all of us have already have almost all the pathogens that affect humans in the first place. So the concept of what is the debilitation of stress, the first thing is it prevents the continuous repair of all the cells that are dying every day from normal attrition. That if you inhibit it enough, then there'll be a point where the numbers of cells lost will compromise the functions, and then we'll start to express a dis-ease about that. That the continued stress shuts down the immune system. And as a result of that, the inherent opportunistic organisms we already have will start to take advantage of us. So those are two very great debilitating effects of the stresses and the influence of the HPA axis on our biology. There's one more, a third one, which I usually designate as adding insult to injury consequence. And this is the third aspect of the HPA action that causes us to have a negative consequence. And it goes like this. When you're in a state of adrenal response, you're in a fight or flight response. When you're in a fight or flight posture, think about this. Do you think you use executive reasoning, conscious logic to deal with this, or do you use reflex behavior? And the answer is reflex behavior. It's faster. It's more powerful. Consciousness is slow. That while you're just deliberating about what you should do, you could already be losing in regard if your life is threatened. So, for example, when you're driving a car, you might be driving with your conscious mind, but if you start to get into an accident, you will actually automatically and rapidly respond to this thing using the reflexive behavior of the brain and not conscious action at all because consciousness is too slow. Well, now let's put this reflex behavior in context. Reflex behavior is hindbrain function. It's the motor coordination part of the back of the brain. Consciousness and thinking part of the brain is the forebrain. Well, here's an interesting thing then. When I get put into fight or flight, I really want to operate from hindbrain reflexes. So it's interesting that when the stress hormones from the adrenal gland are released into the system, remember the first time I said the stress hormones cause the blood vessels in the gut to constrict, causing the blood to preferentially go to the periphery. Well, it's interesting because the very same hormones, when they get in the brain, cause the blood vessels in the forebrain to constrict, forcing the blood to the hindbrain to nourish the reflex center, because this is where we're going to operate from. But basically, when you squeeze the blood vessels in the forebrain, constrict them, you shut down consciousness and intelligence. So an interesting and unwanted aspect of the stress response is that we become less intelligent when we're under stress, because there's a tendency to shut off the forebrain and really operate from reflex behavior, so that a group of people, a nation that is bathed in fear, is less intelligent than a nation that is living in growth and harmony, and will make decisions, of course, that are inappropriate at that particular time. And this may account for some of the conditions of the world that we live in right now, because the fear levels are so great. And it becomes really incumbent upon us to recognize that the perception of fear is a perception. And if we buy fears that don't really exist, our biology doesn't know the difference between a real fear and a made-up fear. And that's why I really, again, emphasize the nature of the book is called The Biology of Belief. It could be officially called The Biology of Perception. But the interesting part is, when we're responding to a fear, is it real or not? Well, I'll tell you where the difference is. From my brain down to my cells, it makes no difference if it's real or not, because they're just getting the information. So the interesting reality is, my belief, whether right or wrong, is still going to control my biology if I'm right or I'm wrong. And so it becomes incumbent upon us to recognize that our beliefs profoundly influence our health, especially if we start to believe that we are in a state of threat or our survival is in question. Then there's a tendency for us to engage the HPA axis and inhibit our growth mechanisms, shut down our immune system, and become less intelligent in the process. And that this is not what biology was designed for. Biology did not see the stress mechanism as a 24/7, 365 event, that it should only be an acute event and we should be maintaining growth. Yet in the world that we have chosen, the media, the government, etc., really encourage us to live in this kind of fear, and it has great debilitation upon our physiological maintenance and our neurological and immunological characters that we express. So there's an important understanding for us, and that is, if you change your perceptions, you can change your biology. So one of the most important things that we have to start recognizing now is to get out of the fear that others would have us in, because as we buy into their fear, we will get sicker and die faster as a consequence of that.
This concludes session 4 of The Wisdom of Your Cells. Our program continues with session 5, Programming and Perception.